You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome, 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 friend. I'm TK, your tour guide to the past, and you are listening to For the Love of History, the podcast where we talk about world history, women's history, and weird history. Welcome, my delicious little donut, and happy International Women's Day if you're listening to this episode when it comes out on March 8th. It's International Women's Day happening internationally.
Oh my gosh.
And I just wanted to send out a big warm, squishy, consensual hug to all of the women in my life, and especially the ladies that pod, as I like to call us, the history podcast women that are out here just creating magic, like Anne from Vulgar History, Laurel and KT from Hightailing History, Rachel and Leah from Hashtag History, Katie from Who Did What Now, also Katie from Queen's Podcast, one of the hosts of Queen's Podcast, Natalie and Gemma from If It Ain't Baroque, which is hilarious, and Deanna at History Hotline, Matilda at Tea Break, Time Travel, and so many more. The ladies that pod are few and far between, but making a huge impact in the history education sphere. So liking their posts, sending their episodes to friends, joining Patreon, just generally supporting them is so important in helping them being able to continue the work that they do. And also, don't forget on International Women's Day to support yourself. Do something that makes you happy, and do something for the women in your life to show them that you appreciate what they do. And after that big spiel, you'd think that today's topic would be about like an Empress baddie or a badass warrior queen, but no, I'm not the best at planning themes. So instead, we are hopping in the time machine today to cover the lost civilization found in the cloud forest of the Andes Mountains. We're going way, way back to year one, so grab your snacks and a beverage, and let's get to it. Lost civilizations have fascinated people since forever, from Atlantis to El Dorado, Troy, Angkor Wat, and so much more. And for me, I remember my introduction to lost cities when I was a kid was watching the animated film Atlantis, The Lost Empire, with flying fish cars that were powered by rock crystal water thingies. It had adventure, an extremely powerful female lead, Princess Kida, I think that's how you say her name, and other badass lady characters like the mechanic girl and the captain, which Smokin, just so cool. She is amazing. She's so badass. Anyways, if you haven't seen it, I highly recommend that you watch it because it's so good. And after watching this movie, I was obsessed with finding lost cities. I was convinced I was the next Indiana Jones and I would find a lost city. So I pretended to look for Atlantis in the pool that was in our neighborhood. The vast majority of my make-believe time was spent pretending I was, in fact, an adventurer in search of a lost city, or that I was a lost fairy girl and I was searching for the lost fairy city. It wasn't lost per se, but I was lost from it, which, So embarrassing, but you know, that's what I did. I was one of those kids. And I don't want to tell you how old I was when I stopped playing those games, but I digress. Even now, I am completely obsessed with the idea that there were whole civilizations with customs, religion, fashion, all the civilization things that are just now completely gone. It fills me with simultaneous comfort, wonder, and dread to know that these people had this whole life that we will maybe never know about. So when I was scrolling through Instagram, as one does, I came across a post about the lost civilization of cloud warriors in Peru, and I was immediately hooked. I had to know more, and thus began my research rabbit hole that I'm going to share with you today. In South America, I think it's safe to say that one of the most famous ancient civilizations is the Inca. In my mental timeline, they were the oldest in the area that we still had information on, but there is a group that predates them by 700 years. And we know precious little about them. In the Andes, specifically in the Ceja de Ceiba, or the Eyebrows of the Jungle, as it's called, which is a fantastic name, there is a forest perpetually shrouded in mist and clouds. It's one of the most complex cloud forest ecosystems in the world, with thousands of animal species that live exclusively in this area, and hundreds of thousands of plant and insect species. And just, I have to tell you this, it has the largest number of orchid varieties in the world, with 4,000 species. Did you know that there were 4,000 species of orchids? I did not know that. And 1,300 of those orphic species are endemic species, which means they are found nowhere else in the world. 1,300 different types of orchids that you can only get in this cloud rainforest. What? So cool. So freaking cool. So within this fragile ecosystem lived a group of people called the Chachapoya. Now, we don't know what they called themselves, but that's the name given to them. The Chachapoya are a group that was kind of lost from the outside world until the 1800s. They had no written language, at least that we know of so far. So the majority of the information that we have about them comes from their enemies, the Inca, which we'll speak on more later, and their allies, the Spanish. What little else we know has only been discovered in the last few years, honestly. Like, I'm talking 1990s and serious research beginning in the 2010s. From the outside looking in, the Chachapoya people flourished as the center of trade for the Andes and the Amazon. They had incredible buildings and cities scattered all over the cloud forest, with the largest being in what is now called Cuelap. This citadel was built a few centuries before Machu Picchu and is the largest stone structure in the Americas, both north and south. This thing is absolutely massive. It looks like some crazy, like, castle fortress thing with just the top knocked off. It's really cool. And it's estimated to have permanently housed, some sources say 5,000. Other sources say 300,000, so there's quite the disparity between those two numbers, but the Chachapoya population in total is estimated to be about 500,000, so we're not really sure. But among this massive population, there seems to have been no formal leader, no king, no chief, no lord, no head of things, and there is also no evidence of a social hierarchy. From what archaeologists have been able to gather from artifacts and written records, they were super egalitarian. They worked together, and people were equal, which to me is really freaking cool. And also, it's super cool that they were able to build such a ginormous structure with no, like, because usually it's like the top people tell the bottom people, hey, I'm gonna need you to build this thing. And they're like, okay, pay me to build this thing. And then the top people are like, okay, here you go. Or sometimes they're like, no, you do it for free because I'm in charge of you. Anyways, it's just really cool that they were able to have this massive building project as equals. Like, they were able to work together as a community and build this incredible location. One of the other things that makes this place unique is the architecture. Most buildings in pre-colonial South America are square, but these buildings are circular with conical grass roofs. On the outside, they have intricate geometric designs, and sometimes they have deer antlers inlaid into the walls. But the information we can glean from this location kind of stops there. The rest of what we know about the Chachapoya people come from extremely unreliable sources. People often say that history is written by the victor, but I'd like to also add that history is written by the salty and those with rose-colored glasses. The Incan Empire lasted from 1438 to 1533, so right around 100-ish years. Some historians will date the Incan civilization all the way back to the 1200s, but the empire was just those 100 years. And during that short time, they sure did love conquering. In their century-long reign, they conquered or absorbed 5 other civilizations, one of which was the Chachapoya people. The Inca also had no written language, but they did tell the Spanish colonizers a lot about the ones they called the Cloud Warriors. From this perspective of the Inca, the Chachapoya were a bunch of head-hunting hardasses who popped out of the clouds like little cumulonimbus murder machines. They were apparently the hardest won civilization to be conquered, but in the end, the Inca did outnumber them and forced the Chachapoya people to relocate and depopulate, if you know what I mean. To the Inca, the Chachapoya were terrible people, and there was also rumors of them being, you know, headhunters, like I said previously, and also eating people. But there is no archaeological evidence that has been found so far to support this. There are heads on the tops of the sarcophagus, but we'll talk about that later. I'm getting ahead of myself. After conquering the Chachapoya people and forcing them to relocate, the Incas began living in their houses and completely took over Cuelap, which sucks because they ruined a ton of potential archaeological clues we could have used. But there was one thing the Inca could not reach. Secret things. Hidden in the caves, thousands of feet above the cloud forest. My brain has a really hard time switching off at night, so I really like to listen to calming things before I go to bed, and I've recently started listening to Calm History, which is exactly as cool as it sounds. If you want to learn about fascinating moments in history in the most relaxing way possible, then try the new podcast, Calm History. Each episode is narrated in a calm voice to help you relax or fall asleep. The host, Harris, has one of the most soothing voices ever, and you're going to feel like you're in a cozy little bookstore with the fireplace going while a friendly professor talks to you. You'll learn about famous explorers, leaders, inventions, civilizations, and ancient wonders. There is even a 6-part series about the Titanic. Just search your favorite podcast player for Calm History or use the link to calmhistory.com, C-A-L-M, history.com, in the episode notes below. I hope you enjoy Calm History. Now back to the episode.
What do you get when you take 2 childhood friends with a passion for unexplored history and a whole lot of booze?
You get the goofiest game in history, Queen's Podcast.
Hi, I'm Nathan.
And I'm Katie, and we're the host of Queen's Podcast.
Join us while we spill the tea on women from history.
We get into all kinds of stories here, like biographies of lesser-known figures, for instance, Sayida Halkura, powerful pirate queen.
To the stories you might already know, like Marie Antoinette or Cleopatra, but with a fun twist.
Each queen is paired with a cocktail that'll totally get you in the mood to hear fun, juicy, and dramatic stories from history.
Because history is so much more than just dudes on a battlefield, and we believe that the female perspective perspective and roles are just as deserving of their time in the spotlight.
Right. So come get to know these queens. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Cheers.
The words mummy and sarcophagus are like crack to anyone with even a passing interest in history. From an elementary school student excited about Egypt to postgraduate students in the archives to casual history lovers in a museum in awe of what they see before them. Everyone loves mummies and everyone loves sarcophagi. I too have been captured in the hyperlink web of research when looking at them. But of all the mummies I have seen and learned about, I have never come across something like the Chachapoya sarcophagi. 9,000 feet, about 3,000 meters above the forest on vertigo-inducingly steep cliff sides, lie hidden treasures that would have stayed hidden if it were not for an earthquake. In 1928, shortly after the rediscovery of Kuelap, a massive earthquake hit Peru. The modern city of Chachapoya was devastated, and among the massive rocks that came down the mountain from a landslide, an alien-like plaster figure was found. Inside the figure was a mummy. The plaster alien turned out to be a sarcophagus. This led to archaeologists exploring the mountains in the once great cloud forest kingdom, and what they found was shocking. Okay? Hundreds of plaster and straw sarcophagi were hidden all around the mountains, surrounding the old Chachapoya territory. The most striking ones are 2 meters tall, with huge sundial faces, prominent noses, and deep-set eyes atop a cylindrical body. Others were like little small blobbies with round painted faces, and others were tiny little mounds no bigger than a football. And on top of some of these sarcophagi were skulls, but we don't know whose skulls they were. Were they ancestor skulls? Were they family member skulls? We don't know whose skulls they were, so we cannot say that they were head hunted. To circle back to our previous conversation about the rumors that the Inca told about them. All of these straw and plaster sarcophagi were painted as well. Some were painted white with red feathers and geometric designs on them. Others were just brown. Some were completely red. And it looks like there were other colors on the sarcophagi that have since faded away. And some, dear one, some had peepees of all shapes and sizes painted on the front of them. I feel like a 10-year-old saying peepee. Like, I feel like we can never escape the curse of Sobek. I think we're like 2 out of 4 in this season. We're just like random peepees appear in the episode. So yeah, we don't really know why, but there's peepees on some of the sarcophagus, but I will digress. Within every one of these plaster sarcophagi, there was a mummy. The mummies were in various states, from being completely intact, with others being nothing but a pile of bones, because unfortunately, there were some not so great people that climbed their way up to the sarcophagus and broke them open and stole stuff, you know, as garbage humans are wont to do. However, all of the ones with full mummies in them had mummies facing the sun. Now, if you're watching on YouTube, I won't be showing the mummies. I have mixed feelings about displaying human remains. I think there are both good and bad aspects to it, and I haven't really figured out my place in the human remains display debate, but if you are curious as to what the mummies look like, I will leave resources from the museum in which they are held in Chachapoya, the modern day city, that you can go ahead and take a look at. But I will describe them to you in non-gruesome detail. All of the mummies, whether big or small, are in the fetal position with their hands close to their faces. From what bioarchaeologist Dr. Sonia Guilin has found, the mummification process varied from natural drying to using animals and bugs to remove tissue, and then the mummies were put together using rope and nails to keep them in their shape. They were then covered in some cloth and then put inside the sarcophagus. Also found in the sarcophagi are small trinkets and gifts, little pieces of jewelry, toys, food, clothing, things that seem important to that person in their living life. It's also clear that these cloud cemeteries were very well kept. It seems that ancestor worship was a big part of the Chachapoya culture, but secrecy was also very important because even though these sarcophagi, these like grave areas seem to have been very well taken care of, there are no clear paths to them. Dr. Guilin hypothesizes that after the construction of the plaster tombs, the paths were destroyed or hidden so no one but the Chachapoya could find them. In a documentary interview with CuriosityStream, she also goes on to say that the sarcophagi they've found and taken back to the museum are only a small fraction of the ones still out in the mountain. She says that nearly every cave and hidden alcove in the area likely has a Chachapoya mummy. Finding these mummies has been great for several reasons. One, because we get to know more about the Chachapoya culture, and two, now we have the ability to debunk a few myths. There are two groups of people in this world, I believe, that can hurt your feelings and make you feel like it's your fault for getting your feelings hurt. Number one, toddlers, okay? And people in academia. I don't know what it is about toddlers, but they can find the thing that you don't like about you and then destroy you with it, okay? And also, academics, specifically historians, while I was collecting information for this episode, article after article, research paper after research paper, continually made fun of Spanish chroniclers for apparently just like being full of shit. It was like all the writers would say, the Spanish said this, but you know, those guys are unreliable little nincompoops, or they would say things like, our only written record on this event is from the Spanish, so we basically have no reliable sources. Just resource after resource was going in hard on these Spanish chroniclers. And unfortunately for us, since the Inca and the Chachapoya people had no written language, our only primary source came from those unreliable narrators. And I just feel like those Spanish chroniclers, what would they even think? They came back in time. They were like, you know what? What did the thing that I worked my whole life to create, what impact did it have on the historical record? And then all of these historians are like, nah, these guys are full of shit. Don't listen to anything they say. Just hilarious. But unfortunately for us, since neither the Inca nor the Chachapoya people had a written language, our only primary sources come from those unreliable narrators. And hey, okay, if you're a delicious donut from Spain, just know that I'm not saying that you are unreliable, and the historians are not saying that you're unreliable. They are saying that the chroniclers are the unreliable ones, all right? When the Spanish came over and was like, it's time to conquer the Inca, those are the unreliable ones, okay? Okay, but I digress. So what did these chroniclers say to garner such a bad reputation? Well, in this case, when it comes to the Chachapoya, the Spanish colonizers claim that they were white. Yes, yes. Here is a direct quote. I'm so worked up. A direct quote from Pedro Cesar de Leon. And he says, "The Chachapoya are the whitest and most handsome of all the people I've seen," he means here in this new land, "and their wives were so beautiful, and because of their gentleness, many of them deserve to be the Inca wives and to be taken to the Sun Temple," which is, this is just a wild thing to say and requires a lot of unpacking of racist beauty standards. Other Spanish colonizers came to Peru, though, and said the same thing, and that the Chachapoya were tall, white, fair-haired, with light-colored eyes, which is such a weird thing to say. Like, why would they randomly say that these people are white? But it might make more sense to know that the Chachapoya that were left behind after the Inca invasion and the Inca, you know, forcing them to decrease their population, sided with the Spanish when the Spanish were colonizing the Inca. The Chachapoya were out for revenge and were ready to pick up the battle once more. So one can assume, given the colorist beauty standards of the time, that the Spanish chroniclers would describe the Chachapoya in a way that they thought was favorable. If you're gonna fight with us or against our enemy, your skin color description gets three shades lighter, type of a thing. So the going hypothesis is that because the Spanish liked the Chachapoya and were using them, they described them in this way. And all sorts of wild theories have been cropping up to explain why the Spanish would describe them as white, why there would be a random white community in Peru. And some people say that it was like a lost group of Vikings, but there's absolutely no way to confirm that that is real at all. So there's that out the window. It also could have been some kind of propaganda, like, look at this very advanced civilization that came before the Inca and built better things. They're light-skinned too, so obviously that means we colonizers have the right to colonize here because these light-skinned people were here before the Inca were. So there you go. There could have been any number of reasons to write these descriptions, but whatever it was, kind of stuck around. And when the sarcophagi were found, this theory was boosted a bit because many of them were painted white. So people were like, they're painted white, so obviously the people inside of them are white. They also had giant peepees drawn on the front of them. So, like, it's cherry picking here. Make it make sense, my friend. But being able to access and encode the DNA from these mummies is painting a new and better picture of what the Chachapoya were like. Another common misconception that is slowly being corrected is that the Chachapoya people were almost wiped out by the Inca, and then after were completely wiped out by the Spanish through diseases, starvation, and all of those other awful colonizer things. However, thanks to new DNA technology and the efforts of Dr. Julian and Ancestry DNA analyzer Sierra Barbieri, we are learning that the Chachapoya people were not wiped out at all. So far, the DNA of 119 people living in the modern-day city of Chachapoya has been analyzed, and their genetic profiles show that their specific DNA group is only found in this area, the area of the original Chachapoya people. So it seems that more Chachapoya people survived than originally thought, which is really, really cool. And they are also slowly being able to get a better idea of what life was like for the Chachapoya. And hopefully someday we can even know what they looked like. even though the information we have about the Chachapoya is extremely limited, these two doctors and many other researchers are continuing their search to expand our knowledge of the Chachapoya people, their customs, cultures, traditions, and what happened to them post-colonization might be revealed sooner than we think. And I can't wait to see what other mysteries these women will uncover. Well, dear one, we have come to our final thought today. And as I was finishing this recording, I realized that this is kind of an International Women's Day podcast episode because of those two doctors. We got a bioarchaeologist and an ancestry DNA analyzer, and they're killing it. They're killing it out there in Chachapoya, helping to rediscover these super cool cloud warriors. So in the end, we did have an International Women's Day episode. So big shout out to those two ladies. They are excellent. I found them in a documentary that's only available on CuriosityStream. This is not sponsored by CuriosityStream at all, but it's a very good documentary. However, I will leave links to the documentary, but also their other research things that they have done, just in case you're not about that Curiosity Stream life. So please check the show notes to support these two amazing scientists and archaeologists. And let's just say that this International Women's Day episode is dedicated to Dr. Sonia and Dr. Sierra, because without them, we would have no information to give. So thank you. Once again. Well, dear one, that is all she wrote for this episode. Thank you so much for joining me. This was really fun. I love South American history. I'm quickly learning that I want to know more. I think I'm going to dive a little bit more into South American religions and mythology, because that's always where I like to start when I'm discovering a new genre of history. And I hope that you enjoyed this episode as well. I know it was a shorter one, but that's all the information that we have available to us. So if you did enjoy this episode, please consider leaving a rating or review, or let me know what you think about this podcast episode in particular, using Spotify's new comment feature. I unfortunately cannot reply, but I do read every single one, and they make me so happy. And they also help Spotify know to push this out to other potential delicious little donuts, because applications are always open, dear one. And if you'd like to support the podcast in other ways, you can always join us over on Patreon. We have lots of stuff like upcoming bonus content and behind the scenes of the making of Shogun, the new series that just came out. I should be out by the time this is out. Yeah. Let's just say I'm a little bit obsessed. So I'll be doing some what to know before watching the episode. I'll do some reaction videos. And also, only available on Patreon will be conversations with me and Rin to get his perspective as a Japanese person on the Shogun series. So that's going to be really cool. So you can head on over to Patreon, join us there. $2 a month. And it really, really helps this podcast grow and be better and continue to happen. And if you'd like to support the podcast in other ways, you can get some amazing merch. Look at this. The only dumb question is the one we don't ask. Adorable. Love this new t-shirt. It's so cute. But if you don't like this one, which that's fine, it's okay, there's other amazing designs, cups, mugs, stickers, magnets, t-shirts, hoodies, everything that also help to support the podcast. But just being here, listening, and sharing each episode is very, very helpful. And I appreciate you being here with me every single week. And finally, if you haven't already, we are so close to 1,000 subscribers on YouTube. So if you could like go subscribe, that'd be like really, really cool. It's a great free 99 way to help for the Love of History podcast. And with that, I will bid you adieu, and I will see you. Oh my gosh, I almost didn't say it. What's wrong with me? Do something nice for yourself. go outside, touch some grass. I haven't touched any grass yet today. I think that's why I almost forgot to say it. Take a little sippy sip of your water. Be kind to yourself. Take good care of yourself this week. And I will see you next week for a spectacular author interview. Okay, I'll see you later. Love you. Bye.
Why is there a metronome right now? Okay.
Hello, everyone. It's Takuya here.
And I'm Gabby.
And we are the hosts of History of Everything, a podcast which you can probably guess by the name is, well, I mean, it's about everything. Do you want to know why people thought potatoes were evil and would give you syphilis? Are you curious about all the stories of the terrible and stupid ways that people have kicked the bucket over the years? Do you want to hear tales about all of the different badasses of history and the lives that they had brought to life? Well, if so, then look no further. History of Everything is just the right podcast for you. It's available on Spotify, Pandora, and anywhere else that you get your podcast from. Join us for some fun and just see how weird and wacky history can be.